So we are coming to our concluding thoughts in this section of Ephesians chapter 5, looking at the marriage relationship, and which we have looked at in some detail, showing us that the marriage relationship in reality is to be a reflection of Christ and the church. And that gives infinite depth to understanding or trying to understand what the relationship between the husband and the wife is to look like. So we're at a point where I'm just trying to give us some general principles that we hopefully have gleaned as we have worked through these verses in Ephesians chapter 5. And then some general applications. And then our final thoughts will be on and considering how this relationship is a transformed relationship. And we'll, Lord willing, we'll talk about that a little bit. We started in this process 2 weeks ago. We were last week we had missions week, so we sort of took a little break there. And we're coming back, and I wanted you to remember some of the general principles that we looked at last time we met. One is recognizing that in this marriage relationship, it's like any other part of our Christian life that involves sanctification. So being a process that the Lord is at work in us, in cooperation with us, studying and praying and the things that He calls us to do in the way that we would walk. And so there is this growth process that takes place in us as we are more separated from the world, as we are more Christ-like. Those are the things that we talk about when we are looking at the sanctification process in a believer. And so with our sanctification process, our marriage relationship is in that process as well. Okay? So one of the things that I have continued to sort of, you know, you find these things that you just kind of feast on for a while. You know, you just meditate on them and you try to grasp them and understand them. But feeding from that process of understanding that the marriage is a process of sanctification, so as we are sanctified, and you see, you read this, we've studied this, we know that sanctification is a process that the Scriptures give us a picture of how we are born, we are a babe, and we grow in our Christian faith, right? And so we become more mature. So by this time, you ought to have been. Read that in Hebrews. So there is this growth process that is to take place in us, right? And so we are to become more like Christ each day as we grow. Now, we know that those are ups and downs in our life, but there should be a general growth in us. It's a testimony to who we are in Christ and that we are one of His. So that if we aren't seeing that growth, then we need to sort of make sure our call and election is true, right? And so we examine ourselves in that. So as you consider that the marriage relationship is part of a sanctification process, the marriage relationship for a Christian marriage, and remember, we sort of said, well, what do we think of as a Christian marriage? Well, that's just when two Christians get married. Well, yes, there is some truth to that, but a Christian marriage is a marriage that is to reflect Christ in the church. Okay? And so, if we are being sanctified as individual believers, our marriage relationship is also to be growing and to be sanctified. And so our marriage relationship is to be moving in a positive direction that reflects Christ in the church more and more. You see, in our time together as husband and wife, we should be growing in our faith, and so also our marriage should be growing so that we reflect Christ in the church more and more in our time together. And I think that's oftentimes the opposite of what's in our brains and what we think happens in our life. We just sort of exist together. It doesn't have that same excitement that it did when we first got married. But in reality, for us as believers, the excitement should be growing. You see, and if it's not, I think we need to examine that relationship and see, are we thinking of our marriage relationship as a reflection of Christ and the church? Or are we thinking of it just like the world thinks of a marriage relationship where two people are just spending their life together? You see, it's not two individuals anymore. It's one flesh. You see, and that's the beauty and the uniqueness of the Christian marriage. Okay? And so that really this flows, each of these one flows right into the other. So the failures that are often found in marriage is always due to this self-thinking process. Right? We sort of quoted the Andy Griffith Show or somebody else who also made that quote of, you know, two ticks, you know, they need a dog. But there's this process where we are always have this tendency because of our sinfulness, because we're still being sanctified, we are not fully glorified yet, and so there's always this battle of ourself and our pride. You know, we hear those lessons, we've talked about that many, many times. The root of all of our sinfulness is pride and self. And so also it is the same root of problems that develop within the marriage relationship is self-thinking, right? So when you are looking for what's best for yourself and not considering your better half, you see, then you're set up for failure and for error, okay? So the answer that the Scriptures give us in the Christian relationship, which is unique and different from the world relationship, because the remedy found for this is that you are no longer self in your marriage as a Christian. You are now one new creature. You are now oneness, and the two shall become one. You see? And so that is really the answer that we found throughout this whole process of studying is Christ in the church, in the same way that we are uniquely and mysteriously, and you cannot understand or fully comprehend it. That's why we call it a mystery. That's why these verses call it a mystery, how we are bound to Christ. So also we are bound to our spouse. You see, so now you are one. You are no longer two. You are not partners. You know, while there is a sense of partnership in it, it's so much more because it's oneness. You see? And that's why if one is hurting, you are hurting. You see? And when you take these general principles, and we'll read here in this verses 28 through 32 are particularly focused on this idea and concept of the oneness and unity that is found between the husband and wife, just as Christ and the church. You see, always taking us back to understanding Christ and the church. So in your walk, you know, this is where part of the challenge becomes for me. So in our walk as Christians, in all that we study, in every lesson that we're learning within the Scriptures, every component of it is filled with Christ, isn't it? Every part of the Scriptures is filled with Christ. Every part of it is filled with understanding more of Christ and His love for the church. Is it not? Is it not always talking about Christ and the church, His people, His chosen people, those whom He has set apart, our relationship with Christ? So is not every lesson really about the marriage relationship in essence? So it also has individuality to it. So there is the individual understanding of how I am bound with Christ and how He loves me as an individual and how I am to grow and how I am to walk as an individual. But that same application comes to the church itself. So Christ not only died for you as an individual, He did, but He died for all His people, all of those whom have been chosen, all of those who have been given to Him by His Father. Right? And so it applies to the church itself. And so as we understand the concept more and more of Christ's love for the church, it should also challenge us to understand more and more the love that the husband is to have for his wife. For I am to love her as Christ loves the church. Do you see? So everything we see in reality brings us back to this relationship between the husband and the wife. That's really that's been challenging for me and profound, and just this new thought process to say, wow, everything I see is about that. So let me read with you Ephesians chapter 5. Excuse me. So husbands, verse 28, okay? So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. You see, here's the uniqueness, here's the oneness. So you love them as your own body. That's not, as your own body isn't like I love her the same way that I love myself. I love her the same way because she is part of my body. Do you see the difference there? I don't love her the same way that I love my own body. I love her because she is a part of my body. Do you see? The two are very similar, but there's a greater depth to understanding. I gave you the analogy last time. In my mind, it was sort of like it's not two separate cakes that have been just put together, cut in half and put together. It's the batter that's been mixed together and baked. And so you are so one with her that she is as your own body. Do you see? Ought to love their own wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh. And it gives you just the opposite. So here's the negative. No one hated his own flesh. But what does he do? He nourishes and he cherishes it. And then again, it brings us back to understanding just as the Lord does the church. You see, so look at what Christ did. Look at what all the scriptures show us about his love for the church. That is to show you how you are to nourish and cherish your wife. You see? All of these things feed back into understanding the depth of that relationship. For we are members of his body, of his flesh and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Remember, we went back, looked at Genesis chapter 2, found the depth of understanding of Adam and Eve and how Eve was taken out of Adam to show that they are out of one and they are one flesh, and the whole creation of the woman. And Ephesians is taking us back there to give us that depth of understanding. This is, verse 32, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Okay? Diane said that there was a blog that you listened to from Tony Evans. I tried to find it. If you can find the link, send it to me, and then we can send it out. But she was listening to a lesson. It was one of those examples of how when the Lord has you in a particular place in study, you hear something else, and you'll hear it differently than you would if you weren't in the other study, right? And the Lord, how He does that in His providence and in His control of where He brings various things to you. And so there was a lesson. Now, it may not speak to anybody else the same way it spoke to you. It might be unique. But there was a lesson that Tony Evans gave in Genesis chapter 2 that was speaking much to what we've been talking about in Ephesians chapter 5. So I tried to find it, but I couldn't find it.
Uh-huh. Who is it, Alistair Beck? Uh-huh. It must be they're trying to tell us. Because it was
confession again.
It was on marriage.
Yeah.
And it was and one of the things he did say, you could go to Martin Lloyd Wright, right?
Is that Martin Lloyd Jones? That's
Martin Lloyd Jones. Mm-hmm. Martin Lloyd Jones, second volume, and he said, if you don't want to read anything else, read this portion, because it was a love letter from him to his wife. And he said you could steal some of the parts out of it.
Yeah.
It was when he was going overseas for 4 weeks and the letter that he wrote to his wife.
Wow, neat.
And yeah, but it was talking about the marriage and that. It's not just, I mean, it was, wow, it was same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, what's going on?
Yeah, and this is what what makes this unique for us as believers in the Christian marriage. You know, the Christian marriage is not like any other marriage, for it is has the ability, because of God's grace and because of the Holy Spirit that dwells within us, to give us the oneness and the picture of Christ and the church. So there's a uniqueness to it. So let's talk about a couple general applications. Remember, this section that we're looking at, we sort of had two sections within this discussion on marriage. The first section was on what the Lord was calling through Paul and through this letter, was saying, wives, submit to your husbands just as you submit to the Lord, right? And so we talked about submission and that picture of submission. And then the section that we've been in for quite a few verses is a picture of how the husband is to love the wife, just as Christ loves the church, right? So that same picture. So when I say how is the husband to treat his wife, that's because in this section we're speaking of how is the husband to love his wife, okay? And obviously there is some application that goes back and forth between the way that the wife treats the husband and how she loves him, but in particular, this section is speaking to how the husband is to love his wife. He is to nourish and to cherish her, right? So sometimes we can say, what is the husband not to do, right? Boy, all my notes binder just keeps flying past all these places. All right, here we go. One of the things that you could say is obvious. You know, sometimes it's an obvious thing. He is not to abuse her. Well, that kind of has, in general, some universal belief system to it. Even the world would say, "Nah, that's not good. You shouldn't abuse your wife." Well, what I would say is, think of this in consideration of what we have looked at in these principles. For the reason that the husband doesn't abuse his wife is because she is a part of him. That's what we just read in the scriptures, isn't it? For he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it. You don't abuse your own flesh if you're of the right mind. Right? So, even jokingly, when we were standing out after we had sort of given a couple of these little thoughts, and you know, she said, "Well, he hit me in the arm, and I had a bruise here." I said, "Well, then he bruised himself." You know, I mean, that's how the connection is. You know, that if you are doing anything that harms her and doesn't do the exact what the scriptures call is to love and to nourish and to cherish, then you're doing harm to yourself. You don't do that because you are one. Remember, none of the self-thinking, but now the one thinking. You see? So that's just sort of in that process. To not neglect. And sometimes I think that can come in a number of ways. You know, we mentioned it a little bit, I think, last time we met, about how because of our oneness, the Lord intends for us to do everything together. You know, now, there are some things, obviously, that from a work standpoint and other areas in our life that we do separate. But if there is anything in our life that can be done together, it should be. And we should be careful not to allow things to come into our life that we do separately, even in the church itself. You know, so easy. You know, I went through a time where I was like on a gazillion committees, and I was going to every meeting there was during the week, just about. And that is neglect, in reality. You know? So even in the thought process of, well, I'm doing this in the church. I mean, it's got to be okay, right? Well, there's a balance, right? There's these platforms of truth. There's a balance in everything in our life, you know? And you certainly see that probably more so in the world, but I think you also see it in what we might call a Christian relationship as far as, boy, always out playing golf, always out hunting, always out with the guys, always out fishing, always out. What, you know, whatever the case might be, whatever it is that draws you away, that's not the intent of the marriage relationship. It's to be done together, right?
Saying to never hunt, never fish, never, right.
Not at all. But like I said, it's a balance. You know, don't be legalistic on this. You know, we can always take things too far. You mean there is a reality where the Lord would call us to have time with men that we can pray together and think together and grow together. But in reality, that should be growing you to help you cherish and nourish your wife more. Right? So, again, don't be legalistic. These are just sort of general thoughts and things to sort of examine and to consider within our life. Don't take her for granted.
Even when serving in the church is okay.
Yes.
It became like I was almost like a single mom. You know, so it was. There's the balance.
Sure.
You know, yep. It's not a bad thing to serve the church. It's just
right. Yeah. Right. There's always a balance. Yeah, there's too much of anything, right? Too much water or you'll drown, right? Even though it's good for you, right? So there's always a balance. Not take for granted. You know, that's part of what Sherry was even mentioning. Well, you know, the kids are taken care of. You know, the groceries will be done. And then, you know, there'll be dinner when I get home. And there'll be, you know, to take those things for granted becomes really easy. Just like any area in our life. Just like Diane was mentioning. You know, we take things for granted very easily. And we can do that within our marriage itself. So then I consider, you know, so these are kind of like the negative things that you might see. But then the positive things to nourish and cherish is a good way to consider the positive things. And in reality, you can sort of think of it in the terms of, you know, a healthy body. Because we get that in the scriptures. We get that in this section of Ephesians of how it's your body and nourishing and cherishing has that application to it of how is it that we nourish and take care of our body. And since we are one body, we are one flesh, how do we nourish and cherish that? Do we consider those things? Do we consider what it is that is healthy food, so to speak? I mean, you can think of it in terms of kind of what do you do for a healthy body? You feed it properly. You do exercise. You protect. You know, those are kind of just general umbrellas to consider. So how do we nourish and cherish? What kind of food are we feeding to our wife? Do we know what things she enjoys that speak to her as far as a way of showing her the love of Christ? You know, you could break it down to vegetables. I mean, I know she likes, you know, green beans, but how does she like those green beans cooked? Right? You know?
So,
that's right. That's right. So, you know, those types of things. You know, what kind of things, yeah, meets those needs, you know, the conversations, the time, the exercise of being one, bringing into the part of what's going on at work, what's happening, what's happening in your life, what's important in your life, what are you struggling with, what are you not struggling with, all those kinds of things. Bringing our spouses into those conversations brings closer the oneness and the unity that is supposed to be there. And those are challenging times. I mean, when I get home at the end of the day, that's not probably my best time to sit down and have a lengthy conversation. I mean, I've shared that with you before. It's usually morning is going to be a better time. You know, and after Sherry has her cup of coffee, it's better in the morning too, right? So, but you know that, and so you nourish and you cherish those things in that way. Yeah. And sometimes we have to do that too. What was that you said? Our ears are slowly going, you know. So, yeah. I always think that's kind of humorous, the way that the Lord makes the high pitch sound go first in men. Isn't that something? And how he made, you know, so I don't know, just let you think about that one.
I'm thankful they make your eyesight get a little worse, because then you don't see my age.
Ah, yeah. the Lord and his humor, right? Oh, that's great.
Segue out of this pretty quick.
That's right. That's why we're talking about protection. And there's a reality of that security that's needed, you know, and I think that's in general, whether that's with finances, whether that's with home, whether that's with clothing, whether that's, you know, those are kind of some of the responsibilities that are typically found in the husband's role of doing that. And even if he's gone, you know, that's the whole, you know, whether it's life insurance, whether, you know, whatever it might be, that's part of that picture of us protecting, you know. And there's natural things to that. I mean, you know, if you are allergic to something, you stay away from that, no matter who you are, right? You know, if you do certain things, and the Lord has created us in that way. Isn't that, I started thinking about this a little bit and just sort of saying the uniqueness of even the way that he has created creatures, for, you know, the chameleon to be able to sort of change their color for protection from predators, for birds to be able to fly, for, you know, the things that the Lord has created in a way that naturally we know what somebody needs to protect. And the scriptures tell us in 1 Peter, it calls women as the weaker vessel, because the Lord has made us uniquely different. Now that's a generalization as well. There are some women I would not want to mess with, that I am the weaker vessel to them, okay? But in general, the way that the Lord has made us, just our physical structure and body and musculature and so forth, there is a way in which the Lord has created that we are designed as men to be the one to protect our wife, right? To protect our own body. You see? There is a uniqueness to the way that the Lord has designed and created all things in that way. You see that in nature as well too, don't you? I mean, typically, I mean, the male lion is bigger, you know, than the female lion. I mean, that's always kind of the way that it is, that the Lord has designed it that way. Remembering? Different roles. Right? So we talked about this at the very beginning, especially when we talked about the submission picture, because that tends to be so misunderstood, is that equal in value, different in roles. Okay? And that is God's design. Okay? Whether that's, you see that in nature, and you see that in us as individuals in the way that God has created man and woman, that we are created with specific roles so that it gives unity to the whole picture, okay? That there's a uniqueness to the way that the God has created us differently, but value is the same. And boy, do we battle that value, because the world values things differently than the way God values things. Isn't that the truth? And we are so quick and easy to fall into the way that we value something more than another. You know, I get so frustrated with that, with award ceremonies. You know, there's so much value put on what your grade is, or how well you are able to do certain things, that there's more value put in particular areas in life. And we battle that for our whole entire life, and in the raising of our children, to sort of say, no, God values you just the way that He made you. You know, you can do whatever you put your mind to. You can do whatever you want to do. That's just not true. I am not going to be a professional basketball player. It's just not going to happen. God did not give me those unique skills and abilities and height and create me in a way that allows me to do anything I want to do. But He did create you to do exactly what He has designed you to do. You see, He has made you uniquely and shaped you to do that. So we're always battling that in the world. Yes, Sal?
And your unique skills have just as much value as the basketball player or the steel worker or whatever.
Absolutely.
Your gifts are unique to you, and your value is in God's eyes. It's just as valuable.
That's right. And that's the whole thing that we fall into the error when we talk about this submission thing. Then we're not going to go back however many years ago, so it wasn't when we talked about that. But there's that whole problem that we get into that's where we associate value to. So if one is submitting to the other, that makes the other one more valuable? No, that's not what the scriptures teach us. You have the same value. And this is, we're speaking in the Lord's eyes and what we are challenged to recognize as well in the value of other fellow human beings. You know, it talks about it in Corinthians, in the church, and that there's no greater value in one part of the body than there is in the other. You know, we always talk about stub your little toe and you'll realize how important your little toe is, right? So you don't value one area more than the other. So those are those character of that protection in the way that the God has uniquely made us. You see? Okay? Let me talk about this concept. We'll introduce this idea of a transformed relationship. Sometimes I think we sort of can easily miss the miraculous thing that happens in a marriage ceremony. Particularly, we're speaking of when there are Christians and this relationship of the marriage relationship that we have been speaking about here in Ephesians chapter 5, and exactly what the scriptures are telling us is happening with these two individuals that are now becoming one flesh. That's what's happening in a marriage ceremony. And in that bond and that oath that they are taking, there is now the creation of a new family has been created. You see? There is a transformation that is taking place between these two individuals who have now committed themselves to become one person. No longer doing self-thinking, but always considering and thinking of the other person in everything they do. That is a big change. You see? That the husband, it tells us, what does it say in Genesis chapter 2 that we looked at, right? In verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So you have this leaving and this joining that takes place in this new bond of them becoming one flesh. That's profound in reality. You see? And there's a lot of things that have to be considered and thought of in that. Can you see why the Lord warns us to not be unevenly yoked? Can you see when we've been speaking of this relationship and what it is supposed to look like as Christ in the church? How is Christ in the church going to be reflected if you have one who is a believer and one who is not? It's not. That's not Christ in the church. For you are adopted into His family. You are bound by the Holy Spirit. You become one body as a church. You see? And so to be unevenly yoked, that is something that cannot truly reflect Christ in the church. You see, so there's great warning to that whole process of understanding that. That's the challenge. You know, we tend to want to keep our individuality and still be married. And that is going to be a really hard time. You know, I hear all the time, well, that's her account. This is my account. Well, she takes care of that bill. I take care of this bill. I think, how do you do that? How do you do that? To me, that would be very difficult to keep that oneness thinking when you're worried about this part and they're worried about that part. Do you see how that just automatically creates division when you're thinking in that way? Well, we're working together on it. We're partners in it. But no, that's not what the scripture is telling us in a Christian relationship. Okay, now, in a worldly relationship, their thinking is basically off, right? I mean, it's not the same as a Christian relationship in considering it as Christ and the church. That's not what they're looking to reflect. They're looking for a different form of love that is really impossible for them to understand what we're talking about. So it's just this staggering thought of understanding that there's this new family unit that is created through the marriage relationship, this new oneness that's happening between two individuals becoming one. And in that is also the challenge of them becoming separate from their previous family, yet still bound to it. Okay, it's not, don't get legalistic on this. It's not like once a Christian marriage happens, they no longer have any responsibility towards their parents. Okay, I mean, that is the fifth commandment. Right? Honor thy father and thy mother, right? So there still is that command. However, it has changed to a totally different relationship. And I think we can probably all think about relationships, perhaps even in our own marriage, if there is a third party, which is that other parents, the parents of either the bride or of the groom, or maybe a fourth party. Maybe there's other parties involved, that if there's too much continued connection to those parents, and if those parents are not letting go and they're still trying to treat their child as they're supposed to be subject to me, and I'm still trying to control their life and tell them this is what you should be doing. Oh no, you don't want to do that. There's a challenge for the parents to also be able to step back and to recognize now they're their own family. You know, and I think there's a reason that the scriptures, you know, in Genesis chapter 2, that the verse that I just read to you. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Kind of, Martin Lloyd makes a little point on that to say, why is it that the scriptures call the man to leave his father and mother, and don't say that the wife should leave the father and the mother? And his point was for us to understand and to consider that there probably is a higher level of change that takes place in the husband, to go from being, you know, submissive to his parents to being the one who is becoming the leader and the head of the family. Whereas the wife is still in a position of submission. Obviously, there's still a great change that takes place there, but she now moves her submission to her husband. So it's kind of like a level of change to consider, I think, that takes place in that husband, and the great, great responsibility to become the head and to be one who is called to love their wife as Christ loves the church. You see?
It's a cultural thing, too. Like in Italian families, it's very hard for the wife to leave her family.
Yeah.
And give the husband the control.
Yeah.
It's cultural.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a challenge there. And reality, what we'll look at, and I'll probably leave that for next week, because there is a great difference culturally from what the scriptures are teaching here. Okay? In the way that the relationship is supposed to look, and the way that the wife and the husband are supposed to relate to one another. From a pagan worldly standpoint, before this time, it was really the women were more like a slave position than they were one with the husband and the way that he was to love and to nourish and to cherish her. This is a new concept and a new thought, particularly when you're looking at the time period when This was written to the Ephesians, and when the scriptures were coming out, this process was very, very different. And what that made me sort of begin to consider and to think about is that, again, in God's design, He created men and women different. Okay? Despite what the world wants to think. That you can pick which one you want to be. We won't even go there. But there's a reality that the Lord has, in His design, created men to be different from women. I mean, it is... Men are from Mars and women are from Venus or something. Wasn't that the book that came out a long time ago? There is some truth to that, right? I mean, we are created uniquely different. And the Lord wants us to be one. What the Lord has created as good, us being different, the world has intended to make bad in reality. Because the Lord has created men to be the stronger vessel and women to be the weaker vessel, what sin does in our life is to make that become used in the wrong way. Do you see? And we definitely see that throughout history. We see it today. We see it in the abuse like we were mentioning because of the uniqueness. So what I want us to work, what we'll work through next week, is to think about how are men and women created by God differently? What is it that are the differences that are amongst them? Because that begins to help us to consider, in God's design, He made those things different. So that we as one, in reality, are better. You see? Because our differences now are used together for God's design and purpose for us at work together as one. You see? So we'll kind of create a little list of things that we can think about, you know, and sometimes that's kind of fun too, of thinking about how uniquely different we are, and can be somewhat humorous when you realize the reality of that. Yeah.
And in the world, there are different religions. And some religions say the wife is property and treated as property. So
yeah.
There's no unity there.
Yeah, right.
So it's tough for us as Christians to try to understand what's going on in the world with
yeah.
other religions.
Well, and that's the reality, that as Christians, for a non-believer to understand what we're speaking of, it's like a foreign language. And sometimes I think that we as Christians, we forget that. And I think the church oftentimes forgets that. And I think that most often happens when it's sort of like we advertise to our community, we're going to do a class on helping your marriage. And you bring people who are non-believers in, and you give them Christian principles or Christian values and say, we'll just use these and live that way. They can't.
Yeah.
You're telling them to do something they cannot do.
Right.
You've put the cart before the horse, so to speak. It's the gospel message. And in reality, what we find is that when you look at these differences and the way that the Lord has brought together, that the uniqueness of the Christian marriage is that it presents the gospel message. You see? And it is the gospel that people need. It's revival that the world needs. You see? That's why I think we just need to have a heart to pray for revival, because that is what ultimately creates change. And you can see that historically in societies. At the times where the Lord has moved in great numbers and revival, society has changed as a result of it. The way that people think, and the behaviors of individuals, the institutions that develop from it, the societies that come out of it, they change. They change to be what you might say is more godly or more filled with truth and correctness. And it comes out of periods of revival. You see? So what we tend to do is we say, well, let's just teach them right and wrong and just give them the Ten Commandments and tell them this is the way you're supposed to live. It doesn't work. It's the gospel that is needed. And our marriage relationship should be a reflection of that gospel message, because it's a reflection of Christ in the church. And that's what the gospel is. You see? Let me pray for us. Oh, Lord, I do thank you for the truth of your word. May it sanctify us. May it work in our hearts and in our minds. May we massage it. May we meditate on it. Would it nourish us, and would we cherish it? Lord, would you grow in us that we would be more Christ-like, that we would treat one another in a way that reflects Christ? Would our marriages reflect it? Would we consider, Lord, that our marriage is to grow more and more, to be more and more like Christ in the church? And Lord, if we're not seeing that, Lord, help us to open our eyes every time we read the scriptures. May we reflect on it and its truth and how that should change and transform us, not only in our own individual life, but in our relationships around us, and especially our marriage relationship. Lord, help us in this, I pray. In Christ's name, amen.